WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. President Trump says a sexually suggestive letter the Wall Street Journal reports he sent to Jeffrey Epstein in 2003 is a fake. CBS's Nancy Cordes.
He said he never wrote it. He doesn't know anything about it. And he said that he's going to be suing the Wall Street Journal, News Corp, and Rupert Murdoch shortly.
Also on social media tonight, Trump said he has asked Attorney General Pam Bondi to produce any and all pertinent grand jury testimony related to Epstein, subject to court approval. Bondi replied, "We are ready to ask the court tomorrow to unseal the grand jury transcripts." CBS says it's canceling The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. He broke the news to his audience tonight.
Next year will be our last season. The network will be ending The Late Show in May. And
Colbert has hosted the show since 2015. The last Late Show will air in May. CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Brewers head to the West Coast. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball. The Brewers open up a three-game series tomorrow night at Dodgers Stadium, but whether Sal Frelick will play remains a question mark. The right fielder and Brewers leadoff batter suffering a hamstring injury on Sunday and underwent an MRI. Doctors say Frelick suffered a minor strain but is day-to-day for now. NBA. The Bucks wrapped up their summer league schedule with a loss to the Chicago Bulls 102-96. Former Bucks center Brook Lopez, now with the Clippers, asked about his two-year $18 million deal with L.A. at the age of 37.
The money's nice. It's that's not what it's about for me. You know, I love playing. I love hooping. I've loved it since I was a little kid. I watched my older brothers play. I've just always been around it, you know, and I love winning just as much. I want to keep winning. I got a great taste for it in Milwaukee, and these guys are all about that here, and I'm all about it, so it's a perfect fit.
That's the Clippers, Brook Lopez. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Milwaukee film critic Mr. Matt Miller. I know you saw this. I saw 28 Years Later as well. I really liked it. My wife loved it, and we're not really horror people, but just something that grabbed. It's just great storytelling.
It is simultaneously what you would want from a zombie movie and something completely different. It's just a really fascinating movie, and one I hope people keep checking out.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. First, Donald Trump's not going to fire Jerome Powell, Federal Reserve Chair. Nope, not going to do it. So highly unlikely, as reported by the Wall Street Journal. But then CNBC reports that Trump told a room full of Republican lawmakers that he's going to fire Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, and actually showed off a draft letter of his firing. And, you know, what's interesting, what's really interesting is while Trump has been losing his mind over Powell, he blames Biden for it. Evidently said that he's a terrible Fed chair. I was surprised he was appointed. I was surprised, frankly, that Biden put him in and extended him. The only problem. Now, remember what Trump said a while ago. All the good things that happen are because of Trump. All of the bad things are because of Biden. And this, in his mind, is very simple in how the frame happens. It was actually Trump who appointed Jerome Powell back in 2017. Yeah. Never mind. It appears that Trump has now exceeded Biden in launching airstrikes against somebody. In fact, he's done more now in his second term than Biden did the entire time. Now he would tell you it's because Joe Biden's Sleepy Joe, and, you know, wasn't as ambitious as him. Also, Crypto Week, again, not going well. The House shot that down again. But hey, a new batch of Trump meme coins are set to be unleashed. They say it's going to add another $100 million to his pocket. So yeah, fleece the flock. And the Epstein thing not going away anytime soon. In fact, Politico is reporting on a recent poll that says 7 in 10 voters, 6 in 10 Trump voters believe that law enforcement's withholding information. That's kind of a big deal. And Trump's response has been pretty interesting, because all I can say is, hey, Donnie, keep digging. Dig as deep as you can. Because understand, this is going to help maybe wake people up. And understand also, Quinnipiac finds that only 17% of voters are okay with what Trump's doing on the Epstein files. The base is like 35%. So half of the base probably gone too. And this is the thing here is, understand, what Trump does is it's always dismiss, attack, deflect, and then change the subject. And we're seeing all of that happening right before our very eyes. Trump is not going to, he's not going to let these out with his name on it. They will be heavily redacted if we get to see anything. And what he's doing right now is calling the base, people that he thought was on their side, losers and weak. And I find it interesting that if you now question this, you're a weakling, you're a Democrat dupe. That's how he's treating his own working class supporters this week, blasting anyone who dare question what he and his administration are doing. And you know, the idea that we were told these were going to come out. But this is a guy who's supposedly built his brand on telling it like it is. He turns the fire hose on the people who got him elected. And as I said, you know, the reality is, with his Truth Social post that just came out, let's not kid ourselves. Every time Trump's in a corner, he does what I told you. Dismiss, attack, deflect, and change the topic. He called this, called the Epstein thing a hoax now. It's a scam. It's BS. Yeah. Straight out of his 2016, 2020, 2024 campaigns. And he went on to attack anyone of his past supporters who had the audacity to question him, and, you know, pivot to something else, you know, because it's the Russia hoax now. And the reality is look, every time he pulls this, it's always the same thing. It's always dismiss, attack, deflect, and change the subject. The Russia probe. All working people wanted were honest elections and to be looked into. And he, again, dismissed it as a witch hunt. And what'd he do? Attacked anyone who dared question. The COVID failures. All people wanted was the truth. We wanted clear answers. What'd we get? We got light bulbs. We got Clorox. We got blame China, blame the Democrats, blame the media, blame everyone except January 6th. He called that a hoax. But all working people wanted was justice, accountability. The people that he calls patriots, they're the ones who should be in jail for this. Now they're being celebrated. The Epstein files are the same kind of thing. People want justice for the abused. People want the criminals held accountable. And here it is. He's calling it a scam. I guess this is a hoax too. Every time. Do you see the pattern? Every time things get uncomfortable for Trump and, well, the powerful, the focus always shifts, not towards justice or truth, but towards scapegoating and silencing the very people who, well, have the most to lose when the system fails. The real cost are the working class, again, is going to be left with a guy who's just going to gaslight, who's just going to deflect, who's just going to dismiss and attack. When all working people want are decent wages, a decent standard of living, and to trust our government, to hold those in power accountable. Do you think this guy, who's shown us time and time again that truth isn't even a word in his vocabulary, that accountability is nothing that he believes in. Do you think now people will start to wake up? I don't. I don't have much hope in that. But this is another one of those things. Let's see how MAGA World, let's see how they play this. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. We'll take a quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So a new CNN poll finds that most of America hates the big unpopular bill. 61% to 39%. And again, even that seems high to me. Because MAGA World, you're going to get hit by this too. And what's interesting is Republican senators say that they don't like the bill, but they're still going to vote for it. Of course, because it gets to their main thing, and that's cutting Medicaid. And when you're going to take almost, what is it, $880 billion out of Medicaid, what do you think is going to happen? We've already seen hospitals start to close. We're already seeing stories of more closures, more layoffs, more cutting of programs, all of that stuff. And understand, it's not good for communities. So Trump's one big nightmare bill, it's simply, what do they say, Robin Hood in reverse, or the anti-Jesus bill brought to you by the people who claim to love the Jesus. And here to share some thoughts on, well, just how bad this could be, how bad it's going to be, and who's going to be affected most by it, I've asked my good friend Pat LaMarche to come share some thoughts. She's a journalist with the Bucks County Beacon, also a homelessness advocate, has written books on this topic, and in her 2004 vice presidential run, actually spent a lot of time living in homeless shelters. Pat, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So let's start with the big, beautiful nightmare bill. Let's start with what this is going to do, this massive cut to Medicaid. What's it going to do to poor people?
It's going to do more of what we've been doing to them for a long time. You know, that whole idea that people with such immense wealth who can rent all of Venice for a wedding need a break, a tax break, which is kind of a joke because they don't pay taxes. This is going to exonerate other taxable parts of their businesses. So they get a tax break so that people who work, most, not 85% of the people that were in the shelters that I worked at, I was the vice president of Safe Harbor and the operations manager of Community Cares, which is then called Carlisle Cares. 55% of the people in the shelter had an income and 30% more were their kids. So 85% of the kids in a shelter were the working poor and their children. And, you know, the fact that these people who need absolutely nothing are going to get more while we're going to cut Medicaid for families and individuals who are just trying to get by and, you know, are bagging your groceries, are picking the peaches, all those people, they're going to lose access to health care and, more importantly, or as importantly, supplemental nutrition in the SNAP program that's going to be basically wiped out in the big, ugly bill.
You know, I go back to this, and again, these are the people who tell me that they love the Jesus so much. And I seem to remember from my Catholic school upbringing, you know, feed the poor, take care of the sick, clothe the naked, help shelter people who need it. It was all about the poor. This is all about attacking the poor.
Yeah, yeah. Where's Eugene Debs when you need him, right? While I am in prison, I am not free, whatever. While anyone's in prison, I am not free. The thing is that there's absolutely no reason that this has to happen. There's no reason that the wealthiest nation on earth has people living in the street. And there's absolutely no reason. Well, there's the theory that as long as you have a homeless class, you can have a poorly paid class, right? Because if I had a buck for every time I heard someone say, at least I'm not homeless. That's what it is. You know, your job sucks. You work too many hours. Your boss robs you. Yep. But you get to go home and say, at least I'm not homeless. And so without that abject poverty class, you wouldn't be able to have the poverty class.
It's the old George Carlin bit. You know, you keep the poor in place to keep the middle class showing up to those crappy jobs and not arguing about wages or benefits or any of that stuff. No, you're spot on.
Except that you haven't kept a middle class. So you've got the poverty class keeping the near poverty class in place because the middle class is vanishing and the wealth class is laughing. I mean, I can't imagine that, what is it, $350,000 more for a person making over $2 million a year. I think that's what the tax break turns out to be. You've made over $2 million a year. You're going to get $350,000 more. So what are you going to do with it? If you took all $350,000 and bought, you know, 7 people an apartment for the year or 15 people an apartment for the year, okay, that money going in your pocket, nice, because you're one of those altruistic types I heard about so much in my, you know, hearing about how the money trickles down. But that is absolutely not what's going to happen. I don't know what they're going to do with their $350,000 because I can't even imagine having that much to spend, let alone $2 million.
A year. Yeah, I mean, some people don't make that in 10 years. And my problem with all of this is that the pain and the suffering does trickle down. And this is, you know, the other day I talked about, you know, a situation where I ran into a guy who was homeless after a big storm here, you know, locally. You lived through it. And, you know, everything he had was just wiped away, gone. And, you know, I said, well, you know, there's the shelter because I know you've done some incredible work. I said, you know, here are people that can help. He's like, they can't help me. And he pulled up his shirt and showed me that he had a colostomy bag. And that looked inflamed. And I'm like, oh, my. I gave the guy what I had in my pocket so he could get a night in a room. But that's only one night. For me, we've got some systematic problems with policy that we should be. That's what we should be focusing on. If we had these problems solved, then I don't mind rich people getting richer. But the problem, we're making poor people worse off while making Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk richer. I don't know. It's just not who I hope we are.
Well, you know, I don't even tell people the whole, you know, $50 a night thing, you know, give somebody some money to get in a hotel room. I tell people keep $5 gift cards in your pocket. Because a $5 gift card, if you give that to somebody and they're on the street, not only do they get 5 times, if they get a cup of coffee, 4 or 5 times to be a customer, you know, a cup of coffee at McDonald's is 99 cents. You don't just get 5 times to be a customer, but you get 5 times to use a bathroom. And there isn't a kinder, better gift you can give a person living on a street, but then access to a bathroom. Not only can they use the bathroom, it's pretty nice, but they can brush their teeth, they can wash their face. The idea that it's easy to be homeless or that people are just faking it for God knows why is just it. So the fact that someone in your kindness to give someone a night off the street, that's enormous. And maybe it's the last night of that guy's life. For God's sakes, he's got a colostomy bag. If it is inflamed, what's happening next, right? But I have had ambulances bring people to the shelter. I have had state troopers bring people to the shelter. They don't call ahead and see if we have room. They don't call ahead and say, hey, I got somebody I found living in the woods. We did one time have a park ranger from the national park up the road a piece bring us a person that was living in the woods because they had been burned out of their apartment. And while the landlord had insurance, most poor people don't have apartment insurance. They don't have renter's insurance. This person got 2 nights in thanks to the Salvation Army of the Red Cross and one of them, in a hotel. And then after that, it was like, see you later, you're on your own, right? So there are any number of calamities that happen in a person's life. And if you are a low-wage worker, and I got news, it's going to be shocking. You're going to be shocked, Rick. People experiencing poverty come from people experiencing poverty. There isn't like a safety net that's being yanked out from under these people by their brothers and sisters and mothers and aunts and uncles. That person doesn't have a safety net either.
Right.
In a poor family, everybody's poor, you know? So I have had grandparents call me at the shelter and say, I'm so sorry that my grandchildren are there, but if I bring my daughter and her three kids into my one bedroom apartment, my landlord will throw me out. Right? Let's be reasonable. Who do we expect to be the safety net? Society has to be the safety net. And if you don't care that the guy that just made your cheeseburger at a fast food joint has nowhere to live, has nowhere to wash their hands, has nowhere to go to the bathroom, bon appetit. Have a good time. Enjoy your cheeseburger that was just made by a person who has nowhere to live.
So in your experience, and we've talked about this numerous times over the years, in your experience, what percentage of the people in the homeless shelters that you've experienced, how many of those people do work and do have jobs?
55% had an income, and that isn't exactly working because an awful lot of those people now are elderly. So the fastest growing subset of homelessness is people who are elderly. So some people end up in a homeless shelter for the first time in their life because they're on Social Security. Their Social Security check is $1,100 and rent is $1,200. Right. So their Social Security, minimum Social Security is more like 820. So if you've worked a minimum wage job your whole life, you have minimum Social Security. If you started working 70, 50 years ago, your paycheck was based on $1.15 an hour. So you weren't socking away money, right? So say you cleaned the lobby at the McDonald's for the last 40 years, and now you're going to retire, which is another myth for the poor, then you don't have a big check. And those people lose their homes really fast, especially in places where fracking's going on, where gentrification's going on, where there are people flooding into an area that have the ability to pay a higher rent. And then a rent that was $700 6 months ago is now $1,500 because there are all these people there with some cash. It's going to be interesting what happens in the next few months under the current administration, because like you said, people are losing their stuff.
Yeah, no, and look, as vulture capitalists buy all the rental properties, it's only going to get worse. So I look at the just recently passed year anniversary of the Grants Pass decision by our Supreme Court. And what we're now criminalizing people walking around with blankets because they might be homeless. What do you have to say to that?
Well, I was at that Grants Pass hearing, and one of my favorite moments was when Ketanji Brown Jackson asked the attorney for Grants Pass. She said to her, you know, I called your police chief at Grants Pass, and I found out that you haven't arrested a single person having a picnic. So what they're using as an indication that someone intends to sleep outside is a blanket or a piece of cardboard or something. And so, you know, as a person who has a blanket project for the homeless, I find that highly offensive. But anyway, so the woman looked trapped, right? Because Ketanji Brown Jackson had done her homework, the Supreme Court justice. She had actually called the police chief and said, how many picnickers have been arrested? And of course, nobody had. But then on another day, I interviewed a woman who had been one of the class action members, and she lives in a car. She lives in a car near her employer. What Grants Pass wanted her to do was move to another town. But I'm here to tell you right now that Pennsylvania is taking it one step further, and I am horrified that Pennsylvania is doing this. I think it's the first state. There are 340 municipalities that have tried to criminalize homelessness. Pennsylvania, I believe, is the first, if not one of the first, that has tried to criminalize homelessness statewide. And there's a Senate bill, Senate Bill 780, which I just reported on for the Bucks County Beacon. Seven Pennsylvania senators, Democratic senators, voted with them. And the Pennsylvania Municipal League has come out against this bill. Because what's going to happen is if you're a private property owner or a municipality and you don't bust up a camp or remove someone's outdoor domicile, you'll be charged $25 per incident, $250 per incident per day. That's what this law says. So municipalities all across Pennsylvania are like, wait a minute. And you get to rat people out. You can rat somebody out and say, hey, there's a guy living in the doorway at the movie house, and you better move him. And if the movie house or the municipality doesn't move him, $250 a day. And if that person faces legal costs for ratting somebody out, they get reimbursed. So there's a financial incentive. I mean, who wrote this bill? Well, I know who wrote it. Mastriano and a couple of others are the sponsors of this thing. But what are we talking about, Pennsylvania? We're the cradle of liberty. If Ben Franklin came back, he'd move to New Jersey. This is disgusting.
No, it is. But, you know, here my mind goes to this place. If they're going to put this kind of energy, this kind of effort, this kind of backing behind something, why not, I don't know, figuring out how to solve this problem, to be more humane, to give people opportunity to find shelter, to get people to be more to be productive citizens and all of that, opportunities that maybe they never had. It seems like in the wealthiest country in the history of humanity, we could do better.
Yeah, and you know, I've been there when they bust up camps. You know what people lose? They lose their insulin. They lose their books. They lose their driver's license. They lose their ID. We're so worried about ID right now. They lose their baby pictures. They lose their blankets, their clothes, their belongings. I mean, when you bust up a camp, it seems really easy to maybe dismiss it. And I know people are busy, and I know it's hard to think about. And literally, the reason most people want to blame people experiencing homelessness for what's happened to them is because if it's not their fault, it can happen to you. Right? I have to blame that person, because if I believe they're blameless, I'm blameless too. And it could happen to me.
No, look, I look at myself, you know, the situation I find myself in with my wife. You know, I might not be able to go back to work at any time soon. You know, we have very limited numbers of family members who are left alive. You know, given, you know, she gets sick, you know, who knows what happens? I mean, we've got a lot of resources. It would be pretty far down the road, but it isn't inconceivable.
Yeah. And the other thing is that people have been bamboozled by this doctrine that we're the greatest country on earth. And I don't go along with we have the greatest potential. And there are so many good people here. I run into good people every single day. You, the other day, running into that poor man in that horrible storm. I moved away from the windows because I thought that storm was going to break the windows in my house. I can't imagine what it was like to be outside in it, right? So we have so many good people. But the bottom line is, there are countries where this doesn't happen. There are countries where every single human being has an access to healthcare. And by the way, the people in those countries live longer and they pay less. Canada, live longer, pay less. Japan, live longer, pay less. The UK, live longer, pay less. South Korea, live longer, pay less. If you're really advocating for die sooner, pay more, which is what we have been taught is the greatest country on earth, don't believe that myth. We just have the greatest potential. And I want us to live up to our potential. And that includes giving a damn.
No, look, I truly believe people care. I got a lot of very, you know, positive reactions of, you know, policies we could be doing, things we should be pursuing. But I got to be honest with you, Pat, I got a lot of response from people who are like, I just want the homeless out of sight, out of mind.
Of course they do. I do too. I want them out of sight, out of mind, because they're in a home. But, you know, I understand they're making you feel bad. And I understand that's uncomfortable. And you, of course, have the luxury of going home. If you don't like looking at a homeless person, you get to go home and shut your door. The problem is, for that homeless person, if they had somewhere else to go, trust me, Scouts Honor, they'd be there. There is nothing appealing to any human being about living on the street or living in your car or living in the creepy guy's apartment that let you come in because he told you you just had to do his dishes and clean his house and he'd give you a place to live. And the next thing you know, you've been locked in his basement. Because I've had women that happened to in my shelters. You want to talk about human trafficking? A person experiencing homelessness is many, many, many times more likely to be picked up and human trafficked than a person who has a home. You want to stop big, big, bad problems, big, bad health issues like a infected colostomy bag? Then for God's sakes, have a home. It ain't that hard. And if you're going to blame them for being, you're going to say, well, they're all mentally ill or they're all drug addicts. I can take you to a house right now and show you a person who's got a substance abuse problem, show you a person with mental illness, show you a person with intellectual disabilities. The difference is whether or not they can afford a home. The difference is poverty. And this country's got way too much poverty.
And the reality is, if we chose to, we could solve this. There's enough people with enough wealth. And look, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, their legacy could be ending homelessness, and it wouldn't cost them a fortune.
It would cost less than the cost of Twitter. What Elon Musk paid for Twitter, he could have ended poverty in the United States.
And yet we're passing a big nightmare bill that's going to just make them a lot more wealthy and our problems a lot worse. Pat, mm-hmm. I appreciate the time. I appreciate the work you do. Keep up the great work. I look forward to talking to you again really soon.
Love you, Rick. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Our good friend, Pat LaMarche. I want to hear your thoughts. What's it like in your community? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Are you one of those folks just happy they're out of sight, out of mind? And if you are you willing to push those folks to say, hey, yeah, maybe let's pass some laws, let's pursue some policy to make that possible, but not in a way that we throw them in jail or criminalize them, but to where they actually get a home? Want to hear your thoughts? rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Stars, a few clouds around in the overnight, a light north to northeast wind. Morning low temperatures in the upper 50s to lower 60s. For Friday, though, quite a bit of sunshine. High temperatures in the lower to middle 70s. Few showers and storms Friday night. Right now, it's 64.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
We've got Chris from Nina. What's your thought this afternoon, Chris?
Oftentimes, you have only one set of viewers that will watch Fox News or watch CNN. What I really actually love and respect from all your viewers is the fact that you tend to have viewers that think on both sides of the aisle. To be open-minded, you need to be willing to listen and learn and possibly change your mind. You don't have to change your mind, but just being willing to listen.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Monday, our six kings with robes, those six conservatives on the Supreme Court ruled that, yeah, go ahead, Trump, go ahead, fire everyone at the Department of Education. In fact, just gut everything. And look, the part here that's interesting is didn't even go through the entire process, just jumped right into that in a hurried up kind of fashion. And you got to wonder what's going to happen against the rest of our government as Trump, you know, going back to his executive order from the beginning of the year to basically reduce the entire federal workforce, what that's going to mean for every department of our government going forward. And here to share some thoughts on what that's going to mean, not just for the workers at the Department of Education, but especially those workers who work taking care of our heroes, the people who work at our veterans administration centers. And that's why I've asked Stacey Shorter to come talk with us. Stacey's the president of AFGE Local 2328. They represent the workers at the Hampton VA in Virginia. Stacey, thanks for taking time for us.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
So what do you make of this ruling? What do you make of, I know it's the Department of Education, but you guys are all kind of in the same shark tank. What do you make of it?
Yeah, we are, because so AFGE represents all different federal agencies. We're the largest labor union that represents federal and DC government employees. So when you're thinking about all these institutions with the acronyms, TSA, FDA, USDA, SSA, right? And also the Department of Education. Those are our folks. So the folks that work there are covered by our union and they have a collective bargaining agreement, or they had one. What's been happening widespread, and everybody knows this, is that people have been getting terminated without cause and without notice. In a lot of these instances, what happens is someone will have a termination email sent to their computer at work. And then at the end of the day, they're removed from the computer system, so they can't even pull up their termination letter. They don't even know, like, what do I do? They just can't log into work the next day.
this is how we treat people. I mean, but look, but this to me is when you, because I heard all during the campaign, I just want government to run like a business. This is government running like a business, isn't it?
Not a good business. I would like to think that most businesses, if you were fired, they would actually give you some paperwork that didn't have, you know, errors in it. For example, maybe some instructions on what to do post separation from the agency. Can you apply for COBRA for health insurance? What happens to your unused leave? What do you do when you get fired? Normally, if a company was to terminate you, they would have a human resources walk you through a process and explain next steps. That's not happening with federal employees. They're just getting locked out of their computer.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten a lot of stories of people who got fired just by text. So I would love to believe that that's how it is in the business world, that they walk you through the, you know, a transition period. Sadly, my experience, not it. What's happening to you is what's happening in the business world for the race to the bottom, the Trump run businesses, I would argue, because you know this to me is indicative of the attack on government, the attack on government employees, and really I think a bit of anger from the working class of this country, who getting fired by email has kind of been, you know, what they've had to endure.
Yeah, most folks who are getting terminated, they're not just at a job, they're at a career. So they went to school, they got a degree, they decided they wanted to be a federal employee and work for the government, and they considered that they were planning on staying 15, 20, some people 30 years. And they were counting on that as their, not just livelihood, but as their purpose. Everyone needs a reason to get up in the morning and get out of bed and have somewhere to go, some kind of meaningful activity that keeps you going, right? Yeah. Otherwise, what's the point?
Especially in your world. I mean, especially in the world that you're in at the VA. I know nurses who work at the VA. I know people who work at various VAs across the country. And they're there because they believe to their core that they're taking care of our heroes.
Right. Because a lot of them are veterans. So they served in the military, then they either retired or left for whatever reason. And then they said, well, I want to keep working around veterans since I'm a veteran. I want to continue to serve. And I can tell you what's happening with these other agencies, with the Department of Education, with SSA, with all of these terminations, the way that they're being handled. At the Hampton VA Medical Center, where I work, the first round of firings that came through right after DOGE got into the OPM, the Office of Personnel Management.
Right.
When DOGE got in there, they just sent out these blanket termination letters to some of our probationary employees. At Hampton, there was 12 folks who got the first round of firings. 11 out of the 12 were veterans. So like that should kind of give you an idea,
yeah,
percentage-wise of who's actually being impacted.
But again, you know, I go back to this idea of running government like a business, because you brought up Doge and Musk is tied to that. So you got Elon and his Doge ferrets going in there. And it didn't matter if you're a veteran, doesn't matter if you're a career employee, doesn't matter. You are just a number and disposable. And it's not surprising to me, again, I go back to the emails, not surprised at all that that's what Elon and his crew did. So let me ask you this. What's the biggest immediate concern right now for federal employees who are facing what could be a torrent of layoffs and firings because of this reduction in force directive? You know, there, I guess there are thousands that have been sent out already, thousands of people.
Correct.
Who are in limbo. You know, what's the biggest immediate concern right now?
What I'm hearing from folks is that they don't know what they're supposed to do. They're not getting all the proper documentation, so they're not sure, can I apply for unemployment insurance? I don't have anything that's indicating a reason or a cause for termination. What happens to my health insurance now? Because there is no process in place and half of the human resources folks are also being terminated, there's just widespread chaos.
And, you know, the other question I have is, since they've shortened the amount of time, because I understand before it used to be, what, 60 days before they could lay someone off? They've now truncated that down to, what, 30 days? How's
that? Or zero days if you're probationary.
Oh, right. So do they get to that zero? Do they get to that immediacy of most workers in this country who are at will without a collective bargaining agreement? Since they're destroying yours, does that become a concern?
I definitely think that what's happening at the federal level is going to ripple out to the general population. Let me give you a specific example. So if we were to fire, let me pick a random number out of the air, 30,000 VA employees, that's 30,000 less folks to run the hospitals. So the patients that would be going to the VA are going to need to go out into the community. That means they're going to be competing with you. That's going to be overwhelming community resources. There's going to be more patients than can be seen because there's not going to be enough providers.
That's dangerous. And it's for everybody, and not just for you know, our veterans, but for everybody else. And the other part of this, and this is why I think people understanding what the VA is and what it does, why it's so important, because you guys have institutional knowledge. You know what illnesses, you know what ailments veterans get because of their service. There's a whole field of knowledge that's not out in the general public health care system.
Yeah, especially when it comes to things like PTSD and mental illness. So most providers in the community don't have the specialized certifications that mental health providers at VA do. For example, there's things like cognitive processing therapy and prolonged exposure therapy. Like, these are specific evidence-based treatments that we know help people. We know that they work, right? But they also take a lot of training and certification, and that takes money. Well, most VA providers have that are working in mental health have either one or the other, and some have both. In the community, you're not going to find that level of qualification.
Now, you brought up Elon and his Doge ferrets, or you brought up the whole Doge thing. The argument at the time, and the argument that I still hear some redheads talking about, is that, you know, the federal workforce is just bloated. It's inefficient. It doesn't do anything because we've been told for 40 years that government can't or shouldn't do anything. How do you respond to those arguments that there's just too many people there? You got too many people. We could do without. I think his number was get rid of four people and maybe hire one more back. What do you say to that?
I can't speak to every single agency, but I can speak to where I work. So I'm in Hampton, Virginia, and the Hampton VA is one of the fastest growing medical centers in the country. We've experienced serious understaffing for many years, and right now we have a 43% vacancy rate in the mental health department. 43% of our positions are unfilled. While this is going on, we're getting influxes of new patients, and then at the same time, we're being threatened with RIFs. So it's really turning into a perfect storm of the VA isn't going to be able to provide services, so veterans are going to get sent to the community where they're going to get healthcare that has less specialization and less wraparound services. Nowhere else can you go to see your ophthalmologist and your audiologist and your therapist and your psychiatrist all in one building, right? Where they're all talking to each other.
Right.
Your primary care doctor knows your social worker.
Real coordination of care. Wow, what a concept. But here's the thing, and this is where, you know, my mind may go a little further than yours, but my belief, the goal, especially at the VA, is to destroy it, privatize, profitize it, because we can't have a universal healthcare system, a true universal healthcare system, where the hospitals, the doctors, and everything all around is owned by we, the people, in our government, and it's working and people like it. You can't have that. So it's got to be destroyed, if nothing more than ideological purposes, but also the profit motive that comes along with it.
Absolutely. And I do think that that's a big piece of it. This has been like a long-term plan, right, of conservatives wanting to privatize and make veterans healthcare for profit. And we all know what the for-profit healthcare system is like right now, right? It's been in the news quite a bit. The bottom line is, when we ask folks to join the military and we ask them to serve and we ask them to give up years of their lives and we ask them to even risk their lives, We promise. We say, if you do this for us, we promise that we'll take care of you when you get home. And right now, that promise is at risk of being broken. And we should all be really worried about that.
No, this is being done in our name. Now, let me ask you about the morale of the workforce, because look, the reality is you've got the people who we've called heroes, we've made commitments to, being cared for, people who are, you know, feeling a lot of stress that they've never had to feel before, are under attack like they've never been before. So I guess, you know, as you as a worker in that environment, what's the stress? What's the environment? What's the morale like?
So I've been there for 18 years, and most of my time has been spent in outpatient mental health. But because of my role in the union, I'm actually representing all of the doctors, all of the registered nurses, pharmacists, social workers, a whole lot of folks, right? I think roughly 1,300 people are part of my bargaining unit. The general theme I'm getting from them is they're exhausted, they're burnt out, and lots of them are looking for other jobs.
Wow. But again, this is what I'm hearing all across the country from people who are just like you, who are just want to go to work and do the job that they love to do and that they want to do. And yet you've got this administration hell bent on, I'm going to go back to destruction. So what can we do? What can people do? Because look, I truly believe that the American people, do view our heroes in that light, do want to honor the promise that this country has made to them, do want to make sure that every veteran gets the care that they need, that they've earned. What do we do? What do we do to back that up?
That's a really good question. It's a question that I get a lot. Well, some concrete low-hanging fruit things that you can think about doing. Like, nobody can do everything, right? There's so much bad stuff that's happening, and the news is just flying at you, and every day it's something else terrible that has happened. And we can't do everything, but everybody can do something. So I would say, choose what it is that you're able to do. If that is showing up for a rally, if you've never gone to one before, tomorrow's going to be a really good day for that. You can Google it online. Just Google Good Trouble Rally and find one near your house. If you can't go to a rally, can you be part of a voter registration drive? Can you help folks register to vote? Can you run for office? Can you be the change you want to see in the world? Can you download the 5 Calls app on your cell phone? And then every day, call your elected officials and tell them what's important to you, because they log phone calls. If you're a constituent and you're calling your member of Congress and they're getting 2,000 calls all on the same issue, their aides are checking this issue off and saying, listen, we need to talk about this because this is what people really care about. So, I mean, I guess my message is find your little piece of the resistance and fight back in whatever way that you can.
Yeah. And remember, ultimately remember, the next time you see a politician who's wrapped himself in the veterans and the flag, you know, remember this moment, because, you know, talk's cheap. This stuff's concrete, and it should be, well, I'm not going with wrapped around them, because I'll get angry emails, but it should be. This should be something that weighs them down in the next election.
I'm hopeful. Well, you know, there's the pendulum, right? Things swing from one direction to the other, to the other, to the other. Unfortunately, what happens if you're a federal employee is the swing is really rough on your life. When you lose your job, you're not just losing your job. Okay. That means you're not going to get paid. You can't make your mortgage. It means you lose your health insurance, not just for you, but for your kids, your entire family. I mean, this is devastating, and it's happening to tens of thousands of people across the country. And these are your neighbors.
No, I mean, it's your friends, your family, your neighbors, all of that. I know I said last question, but you said something there that caught my attention, because this administration is demanding absolute loyalty, And you better be able to write the essay talking about your favorite Trump executive order Is that something that concerned you as a federal employee, that we're moving to an era where your allegiance to one person is how you get to do your job and take care of your family and all that? Does that bother you?
Absolutely. And also, do we want to have to replace the entire federal workforce every 4 years after every election? Think about the impacts of that.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely
right. Do you care if your primary care doctor is a Democrat or a Republican? You want good health care.
Yep. I don't want him to tell me. I want you to just to fix whatever's wrong. That's what I want.
Right.
But Stacey, I appreciate the time. Keep up the fight. Keep up the great work. I hope folks will check out your website, afge2328.org. We'll get links out on social media to keep up with what you're doing. And by all means, please keep us up to date. What's going on?
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Stacey Shorter. Again, I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. What do you think of this? Seriously. These are the people that we've put up on a pedestal. We said these are our heroes. And this is how we treat those people we're calling our heroes. So the question I always ask is, who's going to be the next generation of heroes if they see how we're treating today's heroes? I want to hear your thoughts. Rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. The Teamster members of Local 574 in Minneapolis were back out on strike. Their strike had begun 2 months prior on May 16th. The striking Teamsters had effectively shut down much of the commercial transportation in the city. One exception was made for some farmers who were allowed to bring their produce to market. The powerful Citizens Alliance, created to oppose and destroy unions, tried to defeat the strike. The police clashed violently with the strikers, who tried to keep scab drivers from breaking through their picket lines. As the strike entered its second week, other unions began to strike in support of the Teamsters. Clashes between the police and workers intensified. Minneapolis labor leaders sat down with the police and proposed a truce. The governor of Minnesota, Floyd Olson, helped to arbitrate an agreement. The Teamsters won union recognition and the right for all strikers to return to work, as well as a system of recognizing seniority. On May 25th, they called off the strike and went back to work. But soon the employers began to backpedal on the agreement. They claimed that the negotiations did not include the workers inside warehouses and only covered those who drove and unloaded vehicles. Angered, the Teamsters went back out on strike. Soon, violent clashes between the picketers and police broke out again. Two workers were shot in the back and killed. The governor declared martial law and sent in the National Guard to restore order. A federal mediator brokered another settlement, meeting the major demands of the union. It was a major victory for the Teamsters and a major victory for the workers of Minneapolis and beyond. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So our quote of the day from Fox News' Greg Gutfeld, and again, you know, the reason I don't watch much, I don't watch Fox News, what Greg had to say was, we need to learn from the blacks, the way they were able to remove the power from the N-word by using it. So from now on, it's, what's up, my Nazi? Hey, what's up, my Nazi? Hey, what's hanging, my Nazi? Evidently one didn't really remove the power from the word, since you didn't actually say the word, which is interesting. That's an interesting choice. Probably bit for the best, but I get what you were trying to do. And of course, Fox News' Greg Gutfeld said that because, you know, when you're a chaos merchant desperate for attention, you just reach for whatever toxic nonsense will get people angry enough to mention you. This is what happens when your job isn't to do any real work or actually help people, but to keep that outrage meter stuck at 11 for cable news ratings. And the reality is anyone with half a brain or an ounce of common decency knows you don't reclaim a slur, especially a slur that's soaked in genocide and terror, by turning it into a catchphrase or some punchline. That is, unless you're bored, overpaid, and really clueless about history. Like every other Fox News blowhard, this is what you get. And understand that most working people, most reasonable working people, they've got enough nonsense going on. Don't need this. From trying to pay bills on wages that haven't kept up to bosses who are trying to, well, stick it to you at every turn. Why people watch this? I have no idea. They have no idea. Why you would watch someone like Gutfeld, who equates centuries of oppression with, I guess, was it a comedy bit? Was that the point? All to get himself trending. And the reality is, there's nothing surprising here. This is what they do. Just another rich guy treating suffering like a punchline. All for the sake of another headline and ratings. Because this evidently is what the MAGA base sticks around for. And the reason I hit on this is because, understand, you know, we've got a history of racial oppression. We've got a history with that word. And on this day in labor history, the Port Chicago disaster, the deadliest catastrophe of World War II on the home front, killed 320 sailors, injured nearly 400 more at the Port Chicago Naval Magazine near San Francisco. And you go, well, what's racist about that? Well, it turns out that all of the people who were loading, doing the work of loading the munitions onto the boats, were all young black enlisted men. And all of the people who were telling them to do it, and it was okay, it was safe, were white officers. Not making this up. They were these black enlisted sailors. Their job was to load dynamite munitions onto ships without any training really whatsoever. And when they said, hey, maybe we should know what we're doing. Maybe we should get some specialized training. Maybe all of the orders to hurry up. Maybe we should take our time with, because maybe this stuff could go boom. Understand, as it was reported, the safety aspect of this dismissed by the white officers, claimed the jobs were safe. You know, those munitions, they can't go off. They can't detonate on their own. So when 5,000 tons of TNT exploded on this night in 1944, blowing up the pier, two ships, nearby buildings, basically everything within 1,000 feet, oops. And of the 320 dead, roughly three quarters of them were black men. That's our history. It's the history of minorities in this country. It's the history of workers in this country. And the reality is when the workers said, hey, we're not going back until we get better training, we get safer conditions, and assured that this is going to happen again. Well, of the 258 who refused, citing fear for their lives, 50 of them were charged with mutiny, and the rest were discharged dishonorably. Long sentence, a lifetime stigma. And it wasn't until the Biden era in 2024 that the Navy posthumously exonerated all of the men who were convicted. And it was Clinton back in 1999 who pardoned one of the survivors, Freddie Meeks, who at the time was 79 years old. That's our history. And you have someone like Gutfeld who is going to, well, make light of all of it. Why? Who knows? I'm going to guess my initial gut reaction of chaos merchant looking for attention is probably spot on. Probably so used to saying the outrageous stuff to get people to pay attention, knowing that that's what the base wants and nobody would care. Because normally I don't. Normally I expect it. But this just seemed, again, par for the course. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at the Rick Smith Show.com. Tell me what you think. You miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz. It's the end of an era. CBS says The Late Show with Stephen Colbert will air its final show in May.
The company says it will retire the Late Show franchise and calls it purely a financial decision. Colbert broke the news to the audience during Thursday's taping.
Before we start the show, I want to let you know something that I found out just last night. Next year will be our last season. The network will be ending The Late Show in May. And yeah, I share your feelings. It's
Colbert has been at the helm of the show since 2015 and is the dominant leader in the late night ratings race.
I'm not being replaced. This is all just going away.
Matt Piper, and CBS News, New York.
CBS says the cancellation is not related in any way to the show's performance or content. The House may vote late tonight on a bill that would cancel nine